Art put in at Laclede's Landing in St. Louis after 2 months on the river. Even from the river, he could see that the city had changed a lot since he was last here many years before. Missouri was in the Union of States now. St. Louis had grown from a frontier town to a bustling, prosperous city of nearly 10,000 people. That was a lot of people, too many people for someone like Art, who had grown accustomed to life in the wilderness, going for days or weeks without seeing another human soul. A friendly hand ashore took the rope Art tossed to him and made the boat secure.
So you'll be wanting to sell them furs, I reckon.
Yeah, you buying?
No, Mr. Ashley does the buying. I just work for him.
That'd be William Ashley?
Yes, sir. You know him, I expect.
Well, I know of him. If he's the one buying, then I'm selling.
Well, very good, sir. If you'll permit me, I'll get the plues loaded and down to Ashley's office.
Yeah, I appreciate that. 15 minutes later, the pelts were loaded onto an ox cart and hauled down to Ashley's office. Art sat with his fur bundles, his legs dangling over the back as the cart rolled up Market Street. Dog followed behind the cart, seeming not to mind the people and traffic everywhere, and the people gave Dog a wide berth. St. Louis was a vibrant city. For someone used to solitude so quiet that he could hear the flutter of a bird's wings, the noise of civilization was almost unbearable. The cart stopped in front of a two-story building. A neatly painted sign out front read, "Furs Bought and Sold, William Ashley, Proprietor." Even before Art dismounted, a dignified-looking man wearing mustard-colored trousers and a blue jacket came out of the building and began looking Art's load over. The man's whiskers were neatly trimmed, his hands clean, and his eyes bright and direct.
"You've got some good-looking plues there.
Would you be Ashley?"
"Indeed, that is who I am, sir. William Ashley, at your service."
"And you're the man Clyde told me to look up."
"Clyde?"
"Clyde Barnes."
"Oh, yes. I know of Mr. Barnes. How is he?"
"He's dead. Killed by Indians on our way downriver."
"I'm sincerely sorry to hear that. Blackfoot?"
"Our Rickerer."
"I see. Well, the Blackfoot have always been hostile to our fur trading enterprise. But the problem with the Arickara is more recent."
"Is it true that a couple of your men traded bad whiskey to the Arickara for pelts?"
"Word does get around, doesn't it?" "Yes, unfortunately it is true. Men were working for me. But the idea of trading whiskey for plues was their own. I don't do business that way. Never have, never will. Believe me, Mr. McDill and Mr. Cavanis were severely reprimanded."
"Reprimanded? What's that mean?"
"It means I gave them a good scolding."
"People have gotten killed over that. More people are likely to get killed, and all you did was give this McDill and Cavanis a scolding?"
"Now, I have no authority to do anything more to them. I'm not the law."
"I reckon not."
"What's your name, sir?"
"Art."
"Art? Art what?"
"Just Art."
"Well, I reckon if Art is enough for you, it's enough for me. That's your animal?"
Mr. Ashley pointed to Dog, who stood at alert between the cart and Art. "Well, not mine, but we have traveled a piece together."
"Tell you what, Art, give me a day to get your plues counted and graded. Come on back tomorrow morning and I'll have your money."
"All right." Art started to leave, then caught himself and turned back. "Hey, do you suppose I could have $20 now?"
"Want to take advantage of the big city, do you?" "Yes, of course you can. You can have much more than that if you need it."
Nope, 20's enough."
"Come on inside."
Art looked up at the small bell hanging just above the door.
"If I'm in the back, that little bell lets me know when someone comes in."
The back of the store that Ashley mentioned was his counting and grading room. A counter separated the front of the store from the back, and through a door that led into the back, Art could see several long tables around which men were working. Ashley went around behind the counter, took $20 from a strong box, then opened a ledger book and wrote Art's name in it. Beside Art's name, he wrote $20 on advance. He turned the book around and handed the quill pen to Art.
"Make your mark here."
"I can read and write."
"A mountain man who can read and write. I'm impressed."
"Mr. Ashley, do you know a man by the name of Seamus O'Connor?"
"Seamus O'Connor? No, doesn't ring a bell with me."
"He owned a place called the Irish Tavern. I used to have friends who spent time there. A man named Tony and another man named James O'Leary.
Oh, yes, I remember them. O'Leary was a big, strapping fella. And the other, a Tony, you say. They work for Ed Gordon down at the wagon freight yard.
Yeah, that's them. You know where I could find them?
They're dead, son. Both of them.
What? How?
They were unloading a riverboat when the boiler exploded. Killed Gordon and six of his men, including your two friends, Tony and James.
Oh.
Sorry to have to be the one to tell you.
No, that's all right. Those things happen.
Art held up the silver coins.
Thank you for the advance. Come on, dog.
With Dog alongside, Art walked on up Market Street, looking for the Irish Tap, but it was no more. In its place was something called the Joseph LaBarge Tavern. Art stood in front of the building and looked it over.
Oh, please don't! It was an accident!
You bitch, I'll teach you to be clumsy around me.
Art saw a young woman propel backward through the open front door. She fell on the porch, and a large, gross-looking man stomped out of the saloon behind her. The woman tried to get up, but as she did so, the big ugly man hit her again, knocking her back down onto the porch. The woman rolled over onto her hands and knees and tried to escape him that way, but he followed after her and kicked out. Art stepped up onto the porch behind the man.
I'll learn you to spill beer on me, you worthless whore. I'll kick your ass clear into Illinois.
Excuse me, sir.
What do you want, you sorry son of a...
The young woman, now on her knees, looked on in shock and fear as Art reached his hand for her. Ma'am, may I help you up? The woman made no effort to take his hand. Now don't be afraid, no one's gonna hurt you anymore. Hesitantly, the woman took his hand and Art pulled it to her feet.
I didn't mean to spill the beer, but he grabbed me as I walked by. I was startled, I couldn't help it. I tried to explain and apologize, but he wouldn't listen.
Ma'am, you don't owe an explanation or an apology to anyone, least of all a pig like him. Why don't you come on back inside and sit down until you feel better?
Thank you.
Art led her back toward the front door of the saloon, which was still open, now crowded with many patrons who, drawn by the commotion out front, had come to the door to see what was going on. They made way for Art, the woman, and especially Dog.
Hey! You can't bring that dog in here!
He's not my dog, bartender, and I'm not bringing him anywhere. He's just with me.
Get him out of here!
You get him out!
You too! Get him out!
The bartender pointed to a couple of the patrons. The two men started toward Dog, but he bared his wolf-like fangs at him. The two men stopped dead in their tracks. The barge came out from behind the bar.
He can stay if he don't cause no trouble.
Art walked all the way to the rear of the saloon, then chose a chair that put his back to the wall and gave him a good view of the entire room. Dog trotted along with him, then curled up alongside. Art was sitting next to an iron stove. The stove was cold and empty now, but still smelled of smoke and charcoal from its winter use. Once again, the proprietor, LaBarge, came out from behind the bar.
Carla, I expect you'd better get back to work now.
Yes, Mr. LaBarge.
Damnation! Give her a chance to catch her breath.
You paying her wages, mister?
No.
Well, I am. She'll do what I say. Get back to work, Carla. And be more careful about spilling beer on the customers.
Yes, sir.
Looking at Art, Carla smiled.
What can I get you?
A beer.
It's on the house.
Well, thank you.
I reckon you done what you thought was right, hitting Chardine like that. But it's gonna get you killed. Chardine ain't a man you want to mess with.
A moment later, Carla brought Art his beer, smiling shyly, set it down in front of him. From the folds of her dress, she removed a couple of boiled eggs, wet from the brine in which they were stored.
These here two hen's eggs is for me.
Thank you, Carla.
Carla bustled back over to the bar. The man LaBarge called Chardine was carrying two charged pistols, one in either hand.
Where's that son of a bitch?
Art's rifle was leaning against the wall behind him. It was loaded, but not primed, so even if he could get to it, it wouldn't do him any good.
There you are, you bastard! God damn it!
Chardine raised his other pistol. Art had not moved a muscle since the big man had entered the tavern. Dog jumped up. No dog. Better handle this one myself. Both pistols empty, Chardine pulled his knife. Now Art moved. He pulled his own knife and waited.
Is he dead?
Well, I reckon he is.
Get him out of here.
Hold it.
The order came from the chief constable of St. Louis. The man walked into the room.
You people just leave him right where he is until I find out what happened here.
Chardine got himself killed, that's what happened. And if truth be told, there ain't nobody in St. Louis likely to shed a tear over the son of a bitch.
I agree that if anybody in this town needed killing, it was Chardine. But just being downright mean don't give someone the right to kill him. Now, who did it?
I did.
And who might you be?
Art.
Art? Art what?
Art's enough.
No, it ain't, mister. Not when murder's concerned.
Oh, hell, Art didn't murder Chardine. He killed him in self-defense. Everyone in here will testify to that.
That's right, Constable. Chardine came in here blazing away at this young fella.
Who are you?
Name is Matthews. Joe Matthews.
You're saying Chardine shot first?
He didn't shoot first.
Well, if Chardine didn't shoot first, how can it be self-defense?
You didn't let me finish. He didn't shoot first. He was the only one who shot.
That's right. And if you take a look over there, you'll see where them two bullets went. One into the wall and the other one into my stovepipe, which, incidentally, I'm going to have to replace before next winter, so if old Chardine has any money in his pocket, by rights, it should come to me.
How'd you kill him if you didn't shoot him?
With a knife.
After Chardine come at him with a knife.
Jesus. All right, maybe you'd better come with me.
As the constable started toward Art, LaBarge put his hand out to stop him.
Now hold on there, constable. I done told you it was self-defense, and there ain't a man present but won't back me up. You got no call to be taking him in.
I got Mayor Lane to worry about. I've got to answer to him.
All you got to do is tell him you investigated it and found it to be self-defense, pure and simple. Besides which, the mayor is so tied up with this here General Lafayette fella coming to town that he don't want to be bothered with something like this, and you damn well know it.
The constable stroked his jaw for a moment as he considered LaBarge's words. Everyone in the saloon stared at him, waiting for his answer.
I reckon you're right. The jury is sure to find him innocent, so why go to the bother? Ain't gonna be no charge here.
Good.
LaBarge pointed to Chardine's body.
Now, somebody get this trash out of here.
After leaving LaBarge's tavern, Art passed by Chardonnay's, a restaurant that advertised itself as St. Louis's finest dining establishment. It had been a long time since he had eaten a meal he didn't cook himself, and even longer than that since he had eaten in a restaurant, let alone a fancy establishment like this one. Oh, man, that smells good. Dog, I expect you better not go in here with me. Oh, don't give me that. It's just hitting a place for dogs, that's all. Why don't you just wait over there for me? I'll bring you something to eat. Dog walked over to the corner of the porch, made a few quick turns, then settled down. His eyes were closed even before Art went inside. A well-dressed, dignified-looking man came to Art's table.
May I take your order, sir?
What's good?
Sir, I assure you, everything on our menu is without parallel.
That means it's good?
Indeed it does, sir.
All right, then. I'll have pork chops, fried potatoes, and a half dozen hen's eggs. The waiter looked chagrined.
I beg your pardon, sir. Did you say pork chops, fried potatoes, and eggs?
Yeah.
Excuse my asking, sir, but why would you come here to order such pedestrian fare? We have rack of lamb, pork tenderloin, coq au vin, and many other viands not served by any other restaurant in the city. You can get what you just ordered at any cheap hotel in town.
Well, you do have pork chops, potatoes, and eggs, don't you? Now, chicken eggs, not those nasty things from a guinea hen.
Yes, of course, we have those things, but...
And biscuits?
Our bread is baked fresh daily.
Yeah, but do you have biscuits?
Yes, sir, we can prepare biscuits.
good. I'll have biscuits. And pie. How about, do you have any pie?
Apple and pecan.
All right.
All right.
I'll have apple and pecan.
Sir, you do understand, do you not, that by apple and pecan, I'm referring to two separate pies. I don't mean an apple pecan pie.
Yeah, I want one of each.
Very good, sir.
Oh, and I'll have beer with my dinner and coffee with my pie.
Yes, sir. I must say, sir, your appetite is quite prodigious.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I don't reckon it's catching.
Indeed, sir.
Art wasn't sure whether he was having fun, but he knew damn sure the waiter wasn't. He watched him until he disappeared into the kitchen. Out of the corner of his eye, Art saw someone standing just inside the front door looking at him.
Art?
At first, Art couldn't see the woman's features clearly because she was standing in silhouette. He put his hand up to shield his eyes. Realizing that she wasn't clearly visible, the woman moved out of the bright light and up to Art's table.
Do you recognize me now?
The woman was quite pretty. Dark, almost black hair, amber eyes, and a clear olive complexion. Good God, Jenny. Jenny, is that you?
Yes, it's me. I thought I would never see you again.
Well, sit down. Now, come on, sit down here. Have dinner with me.
I don't know. I mean, I've never been in here before. This is a pretty fancy place. I'm not sure I would be welcome.
You are welcome anywhere I'm welcome. Hesitantly and looking around as if expecting to be tossed out at any moment, Jenny sat at the table with Art.
When Carla described the person who came to her rescue, I thought of you. Then when she said that the only name you gave the deputy was Art, I knew it was you. So I checked with Mr. Ashley, and he said he saw you coming to Chardonnay's. I just had to come in here to see for myself.
Well, I'm really glad you did. I'm really happy to see you, Jenny. How are you doing? What are you doing in St. Louis?
Oh, I own my own whorehouse. Carla, the girl you helped, is one of my boarders.
Well, I thought she worked for LaBarge.
She does. She just works for me part-time, but not as a... Well, you know what I mean, I think. What are you doing in St. Louis?
I brought in my winter's trappings. I could have sold it at Rendezvous, but I decided to bring the Plues in myself this time.
Rendezvous? Oh, I remember those. They were always exciting and would have been fun if I hadn't been hauled around as E.B.'s slave.
At that moment, the officious waiter came out of the kitchen carrying Art's order on a tray. Seeing Jenny, he stopped.
What are you doing here?
She's with me. She'd like to order. I invited her to eat with me.
No, absolutely not. I do not allow her kind in here.
You do not allow? I thought you were just a waiter. What does the owner say?
The owner is my father-in-law. He would say exactly what I am saying. Prostitutes are not allowed in here.
Jenny reached her hand across the table and put it on Art's hand.
It's all right, Art. I told you that I wouldn't be welcome. I'll leave now. I don't want to make any trouble.
No, there's no trouble. Art stood up from the table. I'll leave with you.
But, sir, you aren't being asked to leave.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, I was. I told you the lady was my friend.
But what about your food?
You eat it. The waiter looked at the pork chops, fried potatoes, and half dozen eggs.
Oh, sir, I couldn't possibly eat this.
Then feed it to the pigs. Come on, Jenny. Art started toward the front door with her.
But you haven't paid for your meal.
What meal? You don't expect me to pay for a meal I haven't eaten now, do you? Oh.
Why don't you come with me? I'll fix you the best meal you've ever had.
Miss Jenny, I'll take you up on that. As they stepped out of the front door of the restaurant, the dog stood up and started toward him.
Oh!
Relax, he won't hurt you.
What is that? A wolf?
Nope, dog is a dog.
Dog is a dog?
Yeah, his name is Dog.
Why would you name him something like that?
Well, that's the name he picked out for himself.
Well... I certainly don't understand men or dogs in this case.
Art finally got his pork chops, fried potatoes, eggs, biscuits, and gravy. Jenny not only cooked a supper for him, it was obvious that she enjoyed doing it.
Mm-mm.
That is better than anything that fancy restaurant could ever cooked up.
Oh, it's nice having someone to cook for.
Jenny took a steaming apple pie from the oven. It's nice to have someone to cook for me.
Is it?
Yeah, of course it is.
Well, Dog seems to be enjoying his meal.
Dog was eating from a plate she had put on the floor for him.
You, me, Dog, it's almost like a family, isn't it? Do you want some more coffee?
Yeah, I'd love some, thank you. Art enjoyed that meal as much as any he had ever eaten, appreciating it as much for Jenny's company as for the food itself. Her voice, especially her laugh, just kind of washed all over him like a rain shower. I have something for you.
You have something for me? But how could that be? Did you know you were going to see me here?
No, finding you here was a very happy accident.
And I don't understand. What do you mean you have something for me?
It's something that a friend of mine bought, and his last wish was that I give it to a pretty girl, and, well, you're the prettiest girl I know.
Why, thank you, Art. But what do you mean, his last wish?
Art told Jenny about Clyde, about how Clyde was one of the two men who had rescued him many years ago, and how Clyde had been coming to St. Louis with him. He told also of the engine attack that had cost Clyde his life.
Oh, I know who Clyde is. He's the one who saved your life by shooting Bruce Eby. His name is also on my letter of manumission. He was one of the witnesses, along with Pierre Garneau.
Yeah, they were good men, both of them. Art pulled the dress from his pack and showed it to her.
Oh, Art, it's beautiful.
Jenny reached for the dress.
May I?
Well, of course. It's yours. Jenny held it up to herself.
Oh, I don't think I've ever seen anything as beautiful. Wait, I'll be back.
Jenny disappeared for a few minutes, then returned wearing the dress. She had removed her heavy professional makeup. Now, in the simple and beautiful engine dress of white doe skin, Art could see her for what she really was, the girl he remembered her to have been some dozen years before. Jenny, you look like a queen.
Why, thank you, kind sir. And thank you for this dress. I will treasure it, always.
St. Louis was too damn noisy. It seemed to Art that there had been something going on all night long, from boat whistles to bells to people laughing and yelling in the saloons and dram shops. Then shortly after sunrise, the sawmill started again. He had barely managed to sleep through all the other noise, but this one woke him flat up. Bare from the waist up, Art stood at the second floor window, looking out on the busy street below.
Good morning.
Coming up behind him, Jenny put her arms around Art and leaned into his back. She was naked.
Do you want some breakfast?
Well, maybe later. Jenny led Art back to the bed they had shared the night before. Dog, lying curled up over in the corner, didn't even open his eyes.
I never knew anyone who could eat as many eggs as you can.
Jenny put two more eggs onto Art's breakfast plate. Well, I like hen's eggs, and as there aren't many chickens in the mountains, anytime I get into town, I eat as many as I can.
It's a good thing you don't live in town. You keep a whole hen house busy just laying eggs for you.
Art broke the egg, then sopped up the yellow with a biscuit. There's no chance of me ever living in town. I couldn't stand the noise.
Oh, most folks who live here just sort of blanket out their minds. It gets to where you don't even hear it anymore.
Yeah, for you, maybe. Not for me.
How long are you going to stay in town?
Oh, another day or two. I'll need to get supplies and some livestock and start back for this winter's trapping.
So you're going to go back into the mountains all alone?
Yeah. I mean, that is. I'll be alone unless Dog comes with me.
Is Dog going with you?
Art looked over at Dog, who, having eaten his own breakfast, was now lying on the floor with his chin resting on his two front paws. I don't know. That's up to Dog.
You say you couldn't live in the city because of the noise. I don't know how you can spend an entire winter in the mountains all by yourself. I certainly know I couldn't.
Oh, it's nice up there. Well, stars are so big and bright, you get the feeling you could just reach up and pull one down. And, oh, Jenny, the silence is wonderful. After the first snow, it's so quiet you can hear the wind singing through pine boughs half a mile away.
You can keep your silence. I prefer civilization.
Well, I reckon that's why God didn't make everything the same color. I better see to my supplies.
You don't have to leave, you know. You could stay here in St. Louis, or we could go somewhere else. Down to New Orleans, maybe.
Art looked at Jenny for a long time before he opened his mouth. Just as he started to speak, Jenny put out her hand to stop him.
No, don't.
Don't what?
Don't say what you were going to say.
How do you know what I was going to say?
I just know, that's all. You were going to tell me that there never could be anything between us, and...
Art took Jenny's hand in his. Mm-mm. I wasn't going to say that, Jenny. There is something between us, and there always will be, but... I can't live in the city, and you wouldn't survive in the mountains. You know, the Indians have a saying. A fish and a bird can fall in love, but where would they live? Jenny's eyes flooded. Then a tear slid down each cheek. She forced a smile through the tears.
Which one of us is the fish? Which is the bird?
You're the bird. A beautiful bird. Art raised Jenny's hand to her own cheek and caught each of the tears with the tips of her fingers. Then he moved those fingers to his lips, where he kissed them.
Art, will you come back? Will I see you again?
I'm sure of it.
I think you'll be back, too. And until you do return, I will always have last night to remember us by.
Art stepped into William Ashley's Furrier establishment. Ashley came from the back of the building.
Well, if it isn't my friend with no last name. Come for your money, I suppose.
Yes, sir.
I've got it right here.
Ashley opened a ledger book and ran his finger down the column until he came to what he was looking for.
They were nearly all top-quality plus, by the way. Out of 183, only 37 were less than first class. That leaves 146 at $5.10 each, coming to $744.60. 37 at $3.50 each for $129.50 minus the $20 advance brings it to a grand total of $854.10. How do you want that? In cash, credit, or a bank draft?
Credit?
Well, that means I'll keep it on the books for you till you leave. That way you won't be carrying so much money around.
Oh. Art stroked his jaw as he studied Ashley for a long moment.
Oh, look. If you're worried about me cheating you out of the money, why don't I just give it to you now?
Oh, no, I'm not worried about you cheating me. I think I could convince you to give me what's mine.
I reckon you could, Art. I reckon you could. I heard about the little fracas between you and Chardine down at LaBarge's Tavern yesterday. Fact is, the whole town has heard of it in gruesome detail. You don't strike me as the kind of person a man would want to cross.
No, I wouldn't take too kindly to it. Tell you what, give me another $20 and I'll collect the rest later. Ashley counted out 20 more silver dollars, made another entry into the book, then handed them over to Art.
Now don't spend that all in one place.
Why not?
Never mind. It's your money. You can spend it any way you want to. With my hearty congratulations.
When Art left Ashley, he saw quite a crowd gathered down by the waterfront. And wondering what it was, he walked down to see. What's going on?
It's the Marquis de Lafayette, the French hero who helped us gain our independence from England.
Oh, yeah, I heard of him. I didn't even know he was still alive.
He's 67 years old. I read about him in the newspaper.
What's he doing in St. Louis?
He's touring America. From here, he's going to go downriver to New Orleans.
9 carriages were waiting at the riverfront to carry the Marquis de Lafayette and his party of dignitaries to the home of Major Pierre Chouteau, where Mayor William Carr Lane would present the great Revolutionary War hero and confidant of George Washington with the ceremonial keys to the city. Lafayette's boat had been spotted downriver, and a fast rider had brought the news to St. Louis. As a result of the early warning, not only the carriages of the official party were on hand, so were a couple thousand St. Louis citizens, resulting in the crowd Art had seen.
Hell and damnation! Eternal perdition waits for every one of you!
A preacher, wearing a long black coat and a stovepipe hat, was working the crowd. He had a hooked nose and a protruding chin, so that it wasn't too hard to imagine the chin and nose actually sort of touching each other. He was rail thin. As he spoke, he stabbed at the air with a bony finger.
Worms will eat your rotting body, and maggots will gnaw at your innards. I am the one.
Here he comes!
Everyone rushed down to the wharf. Art joined the crowd to watch the arrival of the Frenchman who had come to help the Americans during the Revolutionary War. Lafayette was old, with a shock of bright silver hair. But he stood erect, and he moved with a sprightly step down the gangplank and onto the riverbank. He was met by Mayor Lane, who escorted him to the first in the line of carriages. Lafayette waved at the crowd as the carriage departed. A team of matched white horses pranced saucily on the cobblestone street. As the crowd began to dissipate, the preacher renewed his efforts to capture the crowd.
Heed my words, you sinners, for they are the words of the Lord. And lest ye hear his teaching, damnation will be yours. Like Sodom and Gomorrah, the Lord will rain down his judgment upon them. What the hell was that?
Art looked up the street and saw that an explosion had come from Dunnigan's general store. He saw a huge cloud of billowing smoke coming up from one of the buildings. Fire was leaping from the roof.
God damn!
The crowd gathered quickly around Dunnigan's store, and Art went with them, watching as the building burned furiously. Whew, well, would you look at that? A team pulling the fire wagon came to a halt in front of the burning building. The driver and his assistant jumped down from the wagon seat and began playing out the hoses.
Get that wagon up here! You bet! Get on the pump! We need to get some water on that fire!
A half dozen men, three on each side, began pumping the handles to build up the pressure. Within a shorter time than Art would have imagined, a powerful stream of water gushed from the hose toward the fire. Others present grabbed buckets and began replacing the water in the tank that was pumped out by the men on the pump handle. After several minutes of diligent application of the water, the men gained control of the fire. Flames drew down and disappeared altogether. After several more minutes, even the large billows of smoke were gone, replaced by a few smoldering embers. The building was totally destroyed. The quick action had prevented the fire from spreading to the adjacent buildings. In the Barge's Tavern that evening, Art learned that, in addition to the store owner, Danny Dunnigan, four other men had lost their lives in the explosion and fire.
One of them must have been smoking a pipe. You'd think a fella would have better sense than to smoke a pipe while he's working around gunpowder.
McDill, I've done seen you smoking around gunpowder lots of times.
At the mention of the name, Art looked up to see exactly who McDill was. McDill had been mentioned by Ashley as one of the two men who had created the problem with the Arikara. McDill was a big man with a flat nose and a scar that hooked down across his left eye, causing a deformity of the eyelid before it disappeared into a bushy red beard.
Well, I'll tell you this. I got me enough sense to know how to do it without getting my fool head blowed off, which is more than you can say for Thompson, now ain't it?
Thompson was one of the men killed? George Thompson?
One and the same.
Thompson was supposed to lead Ash's trading party, wasn't he?
He was supposed to, but I don't reckon he'll be doing that now.
Who you think Ashley would get to lead the party now that Thompson's got himself killed?
Well, I reckon it'll either be me or Ben Cavanaugh here.
McDill pointed to one of the men who was sharing his table. That man was nearly as big as McDill, but dark-haired and clean-shaven.
Either one of us could do the job all right.
Better than all right.
Ben Cavanaugh, Art knew, was the other man who had traded whiskey to the Arikara. The damage he and McDill had done had set back relations between the Indians and the whites, possibly for good. At least it would take some sincere talking and trading to win back the trust of the tribes who had once been friendly to the white fur trappers.
Percy McDill, there ain't no way in hell William Ash is gonna let either one of you lead that party. Everybody knows you two is the ones that caused the trouble with the Indians last year.
That was a misunderstanding is all. There weren't nothing wrong with that whiskey. Only mistake we made was giving whiskey in the first place. Engines can't handle whiskey. I know that now.
Yeah, you know that now, but it took a war for you to learn your lesson.
That wasn't that much of a war. And in the long run, it's probably a good thing.
How can a war be a good thing?
It taught the engines better than to mess with us. They slow learners anyhow, seeing they ain't got no proper schools and such. So they needed to be teached proper.
Yeah, well, that ain't the way I look at it, and I don't think that's the way Ashley looks at it either. And you notice he didn't send nobody out northwest to buy furs this year. Like I say, there's no way he's gonna make you head of this trapping party.
I'd like to know just who it would be then. Not me or Cavendish. Who? Matthews? Montgomery? Hoffman? Couldn't none of them find their way up the river and back. Me and Cavendish is the only ones that made the trip more than one time.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
What the hell's wrong with you? You gotta find the furs if you want to make any money. Best way to do that is go with someone that knows what he's doing. Very few of us around anymore, what with engines murdering everybody and accidents happening. So be glad you got us. Hell, I'll drink to me and McGill. Come on, boys. Me and McGill will set all you up with a drink.
After that oration, several crowded up to the bar to get a refill. Art, who was sitting by the stove that still had Chardine's bullet hole in the pipe, watched the whole thing with little interest. He noticed, however, that the two men sitting at the table next to him made no effort to join the others at the bar. One of the two men was the one who had spoken up for him yesterday when the constable was investigating the incident with Chardine. His name, Art remembered, was Joe Matthews. The other man at the table with Matthews was the one who had been challenging McDill and Cavendish. Matthews leaned in closer to his table partner.
I'll say this. There ain't no way I'd go up the river with either one of them no-count bastards in the lead. Ain't neither one of them worth a bucket of warm piss.
Yeah, and if they didn't get you lost, they're more than likely gonna get you killed by engines. Besides which, they're gonna make life miserable for anybody that's working for them.
Still, McDill is right. There's no one else in St. Louis right now that Ashley can get to lead the party. Good ones is already left.
Excuse me, gents. Since you two aren't drinking with McDill and Cavendish, maybe you'd let me buy you beer. Least I can do, and thanks for your speaking out for me.
Well, that's very generous of you, mister.
I remember your name is Matthews.
And my name's Montgomery. Don Montgomery.
Art signaled to Carla, and she brought three beers to the table. Take it you men aren't too fond of McDill and Cavendish.
Fond of them? I doubt their own mothers are fond of those two. Do you know them?
No, but I had a run-in with a couple of a rickerer because of them.
You're lucky you still have your scalp.
Montgomery, were you right when you said Mr. Ashley wouldn't have any choice but to make one of them two the head of his party?
Yeah, I'm afraid I was. All the good ones have left already.
It's too bad. Art sat in silence for a couple of minutes, then finished his drink. Well, been nice talking to you. Departing the tavern, Art walked back down to William Ashley's fur trading post. Seems he couldn't stay away from the place. Almost instantly, William Ashley appeared from the back room where he had been working. He smiled at Art as if he were genuinely glad to see him.
Well, if it isn't the man called Art.
Hello, Mr. Ashley.
What can I do for you, Art?
It's time for me to get supplies laid in for the winter, but,
But what?
Well, Dunnigan's store got burned down, and Dunnigan was killed in the fire. Don't know where I can get outfitted now.
I can outfit you, Art. I've all the things you need right here, including livestock.
Is that a fact? Well, I just may have to take you up on that. Though, I reckon now that Dunnigan's place is gone, you're going to be wanting to charge a body, an arm, and a leg to do business with you.
Well, a fella has a right to make a reasonable profit, but I won't hold you up none. I promise you that.
Ashley opened the ledger book and took a quill pen from the inkwell.
You just tell me what you need, and I'll, on second thought, I've got a proposition for you. I won't charge you anything at all if you'll do me a favor.
What kind of favor?
I want you to lead the trapping party upriver.
Oh, the way they're talking over in the tavern, you'll be asking McDill or Cavendish to lead the party.
Well, truth to tell, I figured I was going to have to ask one or the other. What with Thompson dead, they're near about the only ones left in town that could find their way upriver and back without wearing a quiver of arrows in the backs. But they are a couple of the biggest no-accounts that ever drew a breath, and I hate the thought of putting either one of them in charge.
No offense, but why would you ask me to lead the party? You don't know anything about me.
I know you brought in the largest catch of any one man this season, and they were all fine pelts, too. I've been through them all. Most folks will try and pass off 10 or 20 bad pelts, but you culled them out and had all the lower quality plues together. That's plumb unusual in my experience. Why'd you do that, Art?
I figure if a man wants honest treatment, then he needs to be honest.
That's a good policy. But it's not just the pelts you brought back that makes me think you'd be a good man. I checked around on you, Art. There's some fellas in town say they remember you from the war. They say you was at New Orleans with Andy Jackson.
That I was.
And they say you was made a lieutenant even though you was only 15 years old.
Oh, I don't know that I was a real lieutenant. I think they may have just done that to be nice.
Well, real or not, everyone who's ever heard of you has nothing but good things to say about you. Plus, there's no denying that you can handle yourself if it comes down to it. Your run-in with Chardine yesterday proved that. That's all I need to know. I'd like you to lead my trading party upriver.
And I'd like to do it for you, Mr. Ashley, but I work alone.
Oh, don't misunderstand me, Art. I'm not asking you to trap with the team. You can still work alone. All I want you to do is lead my party upriver and make peace with the Indians.
Beg your pardon? Ashley could see he had the mountain man's interest, but he needed to convince him that only he was the right man for this job.
You see, Art, that's the whole of it. Truth to tell, MacDill or Cavanis, either one, could lead the party upriver. But because of what happened with the Arikara last year, there's likely to be even more Indians now that don't want us coming into their territory. I need somebody that can parley with them, work out a way that our men can trap in their country without getting their scalp lifted. I sure can't count on MacDill or Cavanis for that.
Well, I don't know. There's a hell of a lot of Indians up that way. Now, the Poncas, the Sioux, Cheyenne, Mandans, hell, even the Arikaras, that I could probably deal with. But there's also Blackfoot. And they're about the goddamnest, orneriest people there are in creation.
Do this for me, Art, and I'll outfit you for free. A horse and two mules, food, gunpowder, lead, matches, anything and everything you need, I'll furnish. And I'll let you pick out your own livestock. Then, once you get the party upriver and make peace with the Indians, why, you can go off on your own. And because I'm giving you your personal outfit free, every pelt you bring back will be pure profit for you.
Same price as you're paying now?
No guarantees. Don't know what the market will bear. But I can assure you I won't cheat you. Never would.
If I agree, when do we leave?
Leave whenever you want to. You'll be in charge.
All right. Well, then have your party gathered up, ready to go by sunrise tomorrow morning. Ashley smiled broadly, then extended his hand.
Thanks. I'll start getting your supplies together.
Mr. Ashley, you're a respected businessman in St. Louis. I expect you know just about everyone and everything about the town, don't you?
You mean, am I a busybody who sticks his nose into everyone's business?
Oh, no, I didn't mean that.
Oh, I was just funning with you. Yes, I know quite a bit about what is going on in this ragamuffin town. Why do you ask? Do you have a question about someone?
Well, there's a girl here in town, and...
My, you work fast. You've only been here a few days, and you've already met a girl?
Well, now, the fact is, I've known her for a long time. I'd just like to know how she's getting along.
I'll tell you if I know. What's her name?
Jenny.
Jenny? What's her last name?
She doesn't have a last name.
Art, what is it about you and last names? You don't have a last name. Now you're asking me about a young woman who doesn't have a last name. Jenny, you say. Well, there must be a dozen women and girls in this town named Jenny.
Well, this Jenny lives in a big white house over on Chestnut Street.
Well, that narrows it down a bit. Wait a minute. A big white house on Chestnut, you say? Are you talking about the House of Flowers?
I don't know. House of Flowers?
The House of Flowers is a big white house on Chestnut Street run by a girl named Jenny, but it's,
a whorehouse?
Well, I wasn't going to say that exactly, but yes, it is. Is that the one you mean?
Yeah, that's the one I mean. I didn't know it was called that. How does the town treat her?
She's a whore. How's the town supposed to treat her?
Well, she's a good woman.
But she's a...
Art held up his hand to stop Ashley. Yeah, look, I know she's a whore, but she didn't have much choice in that. Inside, she's got a good soul. I wouldn't want to see her hurt in any way.
Well, as far as I can tell, she isn't being mistreated. She sort of minds her own business. So the only people who ever take note of her are the people who are her customers.
Well, she must be doing pretty well to own that big house, huh?
Yes, well, that's another matter. There's some who say she might have bitten off more than she could chew when she bought that house. You see, she couldn't buy it outright, so the bank holds a paper on it. And from what I understand, some of our so-called decent folk, well, the good citizens of the city of St. Louis are trying to get the bank to foreclose.
Why?
Why? Well, because St. Louis is becoming a very important city, and there are those who feel that having something like the House of Flowers is bad.
Who are the ones that are saying this?
Well, one name that comes to mind is Mrs. Sybil Abernathy. She's president of the Women's Auxiliary of the St. Louis Betterment League. Betterment League. A genuine bunch of busybodies is what they are. Put me to shame in that department.
Is Jenny behind in her payments?
Oh, I'm sure she isn't. Dwayne Abernathy, Sybil's husband, is chairman of the board of directors of the bank. Believe me, if Jenny was late in her payments, he wouldn't hesitate to throw her out on her you-know-what.
Then I don't see how anyone can do anything against her.
One would think so.
Ashley looked at the younger man and saw the naive kid who still resided inside the tall, strong, weathered exterior. Still, it made Art that much more likable and trustworthy.
But there's a clause in her contract that would allow the bank to call in the note at any time.
Good God, can a bank do that? I mean, if you're paying on time?
Yes, as long as that clause is in the contract. And that clause is put into many loans that the bank considers at risk. Whorehouses are considered at risk. Though why they are, I don't know. They always seem to do a brisk business.
How much does Jenny owe? Do you know?
I think it's around $500 or so.
Pay it off.
I beg your pardon?
I want you to take $500, or however much it takes, from my account here, pay off Miss Jenny's loan.
Art, that's a hell of a lot of money. Are you sure you want to do that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you're going to do that, why don't you just take the money yourself and give it to her?
Art shook his head emphatically. No question in his mind about this.
No, I'd rather do it this way. That is, if you will do it for me. And I don't want her to know that the money came from me.
Yes, of course I'll do it for you. You are a rare man, Art. A rare man indeed. And the rest of the money in your account?
I'd like for you to just keep it on your books.
You mean you want me to act as a bank for you?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. Fact is, I do sort of run a bank here. You won't be the only one to leave your money on the books.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, Mr. Ashley.
The two men shook hands. Without another word, Art left Ashley's place. Dog, who had trailed Art at a close distance throughout the entire day, stayed with him every step. Art always kept him within sight from the corner of his eye, but didn't seek him out or pet him or feed him. Dog was a survivor for sure. Art wandered back down to the waterfront, where again the same talkative preacher was holding court. He stopped to listen for a few minutes to the longest nonstop sermon he had ever heard, and he remembered a few from his own childhood.
These here newfangled steamboats is an abomination to the Lord. I say now that all God-fearing people should rise up against them, for surely they will mean the end of us all. Steam wilts the grass, so the horses and cattle cannot feed. The noise of those infernal engines keeps the chickens from laying, puts the pigs off in their feed, and makes our women folk barren. And it also poisons the water.
The preacher opened his Bible and began to read.
From the book of Revelation 9:11, the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they was made bitter.
He slammed the Bible shut and stabbed at the air with a long, bony finger.
This is the word of the Lord!
Amen, brother. Art shook his head and walked away. Returning to LaBarge's tavern, Art took the table that had become his during his time in St. Louis. He was eating a supper of beans and bacon when a shadow fell across his table. Looking up, he saw McDillan Cavanaugh staring down at him.
Oh, something I can do for you, gentlemen?
I'm told you plan to lead the fur trapping party out of here in the morning.
That's right.
But you ain't gonna do it.
Oh, why not?
Because by rights, that job belongs to me and my partner here. So if I was you, mister, I'd just get on out of town tonight and forget about the fur trapping party.
Well, I'm sorry. I've already given my word to Mr. Ashley.
Maybe you don't understand what I'm telling you, boy. I'm telling you, you ain't going to lead no fur trapping party.
McDill, why don't you and Cavanaugh back away and leave that fella alone? If Mr. Ashley chose him, it's good enough for me.
Yeah, me too.
Look, Matthews, Montgomery, once we start up the river tomorrow with me and Cavanaugh in charge, I'm going to remember your sassy mouths. Now, what's your name, mister?
My name's Art. Oh, and this is Dog. So far, Dog had not even raised his head.
Art. That's all? My name's just Art?
That's enough for me.
Art and Dog? Hey, Ben, which one of these two is a real dog?
You know what I think? I think we ought to whoop old Art here just to show him who his master is.
I don't think he's very smart.
Yeah. What do you say, Art? Shall we show you who your master is?
Well, hell's fire, there are two of you.
Well, then we'll just take turns with you. First one of us will whoop you, then the other. How's that sound?
I guess that sounds fair enough. Who's going to go first?
Who's going to go first? What difference does that make?
Well, hell, it makes a lot of difference. You see, under this table, I'm holding a charged pistol. I intend to shoot whoever's going to go first, then I'll let Dog deal with the other. Dog!
Wait a minute now.
Come on, gentlemen, make up your mind. Who's going to go first?
You ain't got no charged pistol under that table.
Try me.
McDill? Cavanaugh?
You stay out of this, LaBarge. This here ain't none of your concern.
Oh, I ain't planning to get into it. But I was just wondering if you had any last wishes. I mean, after he and Dog killed the two of you, is there anyone you want me to write?
Are you joking, LaBarge? There ain't nobody who'll miss either one of them after they're dead.
You're probably right. I just wanted to give him a chance.
I don't believe he's holding no charged pistol under that table.
I don't either.
You go first.
Me go first? Hell no, I'm not going for you. Go first.
Two men stood there for a long moment staring at Art, who was looking hard back into their eyes.
Ah, we was only funning with you, Art. If you're gonna be leading us tomorrow, we just wanted to know that you got the makings, that's all. We didn't mean nothing, did we, Cavanaugh?
No, we didn't mean nothing. Would you call your dog off now?
He's not my dog. Art looked over at Dog and nodded. Dog eyed Art, then the two bullies, and gave up his threat position. He lay down again with one eye shut, the other wide open. If you're planning on going on this trip, you be in front of Ashley's at sunrise tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll be there. You can put your pistol away now.
Oh yeah. With a smile, Art brought his hand up from under the table. He was holding a fork. You know, as it turns out, you were right. I wasn't holding the pistol.
You son of a bitch.
He got you. He sure as hell did.
Ah, go to hell, Matthews.
Scowling, McDill and Cavanaugh turned and left the tavern. Art returned to his meal, using the fork pistol to shovel in the food that would be his last city meal for a long time to come. It was just before sunrise, and in the east the sky was pearl gray, laced with streaks of pink. The Mississippi River was glowing a silver blue, as if it had its own internal source of light. Although Art had told everyone to be in front of Ashley's place by sunup, they all arrived even before the sun rose. Art, who had picked out his livestock the night before, now saddled his horse and checked the harness on his pack mules. Neither of his mules were heavily loaded now, as they were carrying only the supplies he would need for the winter, as well as some trading material for the engines. Ashley had furnished a goodly amount of trade goods, so much that these items were equally distributed among all the mules in the party. After Art checked his own animals, he went down the line looking at the others and meeting the men who'd be traveling with him. McDill was working on his animals. He looked to be full of piss and vinegar.
What's Ashley doing giving the engines all this stuff? We give them all this stuff this time, they're going to expect it every time. And then if we show up empty-handed, there's going to be hell to pay.
Yeah, if we had any kind of leader, he'd tell Ashley what a fool he's making of himself.
Art knew the McDill and Cavanaugh were talking for his benefit, but he paid no mind to them. Instead, he just looked over the harness and the load. The loads were skillfully packed, evidence that McDill and Cavanaugh knew the business. Art hoped he would have no more trouble with them. Third in line was Don Montgomery,
followed by Joe Matthews. Montgomery and Matthews were first cousins, about 22 years old. They were a little green, but they seemed willing enough. Last was Herman Hoffman. Hoffman was a big Hessian, and at 50, the oldest of the group. Hoffman had fought in the Napoleonic Wars, and any misgivings Art might have had about whether or not Hoffman would follow a much younger man were dispelled when Hoffman spoke. Hoffman was a military man, used to the structure of command, and in his mind, Art was his commander, pure and simple. You ever been trapping before?
Nein, but I am strong and good worker. I will do what you tell me, and I think all will be fine.
I think all will be fine as well. Looking down the street, Art saw William Ashley moving toward him, having walked up from his home. Although the sun had not yet risen, there was enough light for Art to recognize him from some distance away.
Well, Art, you have your party together, I see. Have you met all of them?
Yep, McDill, Cavanis, and the others.
Yes, I heard about your little run-in with those two last night. But from what I hear, you handled it very well. I don't think you'll be having any more trouble from those two, and they are good trappers. It's just that they, well, you saw how they are last night. And this is as much a peacemaking trip as anything else. After what happened last winter, I don't think I could trust either one of them to make a lasting peace with the Indians.
No, I wouldn't think that very likely. Ashley took a letter from his pocket and handed it to Art.
This is a letter to Joe Walker. Joe is in command of a fort built by the American Fur Company. We may be competitors in business, but they'll have as much an interest in having peace with the Indians as we do. So I reckon Joe will treat you all right when you get there. Also, if you need to replenish any of your supplies, this letter promises that I'll make it good to him.
Thanks. Well, sun's coming up. I expect we best get going.
Good luck to you, Art.
Ashley reached out and shook Art's hand.
Good luck! Good trapping, all you men!
Man up! Twisting around, Art waited until Hoffman, the last man, was mounted.
All right, let's go!
A convoy of 18 horses, 6 men, and 1 dog stretched out for nearly a block as Art led them forward. He planned to go north to the Missouri River, then turn and follow that river all the way to its head. From her bedroom window on the second floor of her house, Jenny watched Art and the others leave. She had thought he might come to see her again last night, hoped that he would, and purposely turned away customers so she'd be ready for him. But he didn't show. When she finally realized, well after midnight, that Art wasn't going to come see her again, she got angry and hurt. But as she considered it, the anger and hurt left to be replaced by a terrible sense of sorrow and longing for what she knew could never be.
Oh, Art, why couldn't we have met at another time and another place? You a farmer, and I an innocent young girl. Go with God, dear Art.
The River Bank of St. Louis had assets of nearly $1 million, and that figure was proudly displayed on the front window of the building. In keeping with its success, the bank occupied one of the most substantial buildings in St. Louis. Built of brick and stone and iron grillwork, it sat squarely on the corner of 4th and Market. Although the bank was owned by a consortium of St. Louis businessmen, it was managed by its chief teller, Theodore Epson, a New Yorker who had been hired by the board when the bank was opened. Epson arrived every morning exactly 1 hour before the bank opened. During that quiet hour, he would go over all the transactions from the day before, often finding a mistake one of his tellers had made. Epson enjoyed finding mistakes because it gave him an opportunity to berate the hapless teller who made it. It also gave him a sense of self-satisfaction and reinforced his personal belief that without him, the bank would just fall into insolvency. One of the most difficult tasks Epson had was in controlling the loans granted by the bank. It seemed that every board member had a close personal friend who had fallen into financial difficulty and could survive if only they could secure a loan. Ibsen tried to explain to the board member concerned that the bank was not in the business of lending money to help people, but was in the business of lending money to make more money. On the other hand, a few of the other board members were after him to deny some of the more solvent loans. One example was the mortgage note the bank held on the House of Flowers. Mrs. Abernathy and her Women's Auxiliary League for the betterment of St. Louis had done their job well. And now there were many St. Louis citizens protesting against Jenny and her House of Flowers. There were many who wanted Jenny's note called and her loan terminated because they considered her business to be unsavory.
Unsavory it might be, but it is certainly a profitable business. Would that all our accounts paid as promptly as the House of Flowers.
Closing the book of yesterday's transactions, Ibsen checked the Terry clock that stood against the wall and saw that it was less than half a minute until time to open. He walked over to the front door and raised the shade. He saw several people standing just outside the door. The first man in line expected Ibsen to open the door at that precise moment, but it wasn't time yet as far as Ibsen was concerned. Ibsen remained standing behind the glass, staring at the clock.
Let us in, Ibsen. It's time to open the door.
Holding up his finger, Ibsen shook his head, indicating that it was not yet time. As the crowd grew more frustrated, Ibsen continued to stare at the clock. Ibsen reached for the door.
Well, it's about time.
You know the hours, Mr. Warren. Our bank opens its doors promptly at 9 o'clock. Not 1 minute sooner, and not 1 minute later.
The customers poured into the bank, then hurried to the two teller cages. Ibsen watched with a sense of smug satisfaction, then returned to his desk. He had been there for no more than 5 minutes when William Ashley arrived. Stepping inside the bank, Ashley looked around for a moment, then came straight to Ibsen's desk.
Mr. Ibsen, I wonder if I might have a word with you.
Certainly, Mr. Ashley. It is always a pleasure to greet one of our fair city's most powerful businessmen. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, Ibsen.
I must say I'm a little surprised to see you, though. I've been given to understand that you have started your own bank for the fur trappers.
Not at all. All I'm doing is keeping some of my trappers' earned income on the books for.
Yes. Isn't that what a bank does?
I suppose. But I'm only doing it as a favor for my trappers. Most of them don't like to carry any more money than they need.
Nobody does. That's what banks are for. You could steer some of your accounts our way, you know.
Yes, I know. And I fully intend to, over a period of time.
Really? So, have you brought me a deposit today?
Not a deposit, but a payment.
A payment? I don't understand. A payment for what? You don't have a loan here.
It isn't for me. It's for one of your customers. It's more than a payment, actually. I intend to pay off the entire mortgage.
Why would you pay off someone else's mortgage? Wait a minute. Have you made the loan yourself? That's it, isn't it? You're paying off the loan because you have made it yourself. You are going into banking.
No. All I'm doing is paying off the loan on behalf of an interested party.
I see. And what loan are you paying off?
I'm paying off the loan on the House of Flowers.
You are paying off the whore's loan?
Yes.
I don't understand. Why would you do such a thing?
I assure you, sir, I am not paying the loan from my own funds. I'm doing so on behalf of an interested party. He doesn't want this Miss Jenny to know that he is doing it.
Are you saying that she doesn't know her loan is being paid off?
That's right.
I am curious. Who is her benefactor? Some businessman in town?
I don't believe I'm at liberty to say who it is. I wasn't told that I couldn't tell, but I wasn't given permission to tell either. Therefore, I feel ethically bound to keep his identity a secret.
Ha! I was right, wasn't I? It is some local businessman. And of course, he would come through someone else if he wanted it kept secret. Like as not, it's one of the same men who in public call for that house to be closed, while in private are her biggest supporters. Who is it? The mayor?
I told you I don't believe I'm at liberty to say. It doesn't matter anyway. All I intend to do is pay off the note. Now, are you going to accept the money or what?
Yes. Yes, of course I'll accept the money.
Later that same afternoon, Jenny herself called at the bank. Seeing her the moment she stepped through the door, Epson went over to meet her.
Yes, Miss Jenny, is there something I can do for you?
I wonder if we could speak in private for a few moments?
Yes, of course we can. Come over here to my desk. We can talk there without being overheard.
There were no other women in the bank, but there were several men customers, most of whom knew who Jenny was, many of whom had been paying customers at the House of Flowers. It would have been easy to pick out the ones who were the customers, for while the others stared at Jenny in unabashed curiosity, her customers looked away pointedly, pretending as if they didn't even see her. Epson led Jenny through the gate of the small, fenced-in area that surrounded his desk. He offered her a chair and sat as well.
Now, Miss Jenny, what is it that we can only discuss in private?
Well, recently, some people have been attempting to close down my business.
Ah, yes. You would be talking about the Women's Auxiliary of the St. Louis Betterment League.
You know about it?
Yes.
Then you also know that chief among these women is Mrs. Abernathy.
Sybil Abernathy, yes.
Doesn't her husband have something to do with this bank?
Yes, indeed. He is the chairman of the board of directors of the bank.
I thought as much.
Jenny opened her portmanteau and flashed out a piece of paper.
According to the contract, even if I'm not in arrears, the bank can call in the remainder of my loan at any time. Is that right?
Yes, but...
That's what I thought. That's why I want to pay off the entire loan today. That way there'll be no chance for the bank to foreclose.
Jenny began writing a bank draft.
I believe the amount is $475.
Epson was silent for a long moment. Jenny looked up at him questioningly.
Am I not right?
Epson wondered what he should do. He had accepted the money from William Ashley to pay off her debt, but he was instructed not to tell Jenny.
Mr. Epson, is $475 correct?
Yes.
Epson decided he would take the money now and decide what to do later. Jenny wrote the draft and handed it to him.
I'll take care of this for you.
Thank you. I may be worried for no reason at all, but Mrs. Abernathy seems to be quite a determined woman, and I fear that she may convince her husband to exercise the foreclosure clause in the contract. I would rather just own the house free and clear so that there is no question.
Yes, I'm sure you're doing the right thing.
Epson picked up the draft and put it in his pocket.
I'll have the title delivered to you.
Thank you again.
Epson stood in the door and watched as Ben helped her climb into her carriage. Then he returned to his desk and sat there for a long moment, contemplating what he should do. Opening a drawer of his desk, he removed a letter he had received from a bank back in Philadelphia.
So, in conclusion, Mr. Epson, our bank is prepared to offer you a rather substantial salary should you accept the offer to become our chief of tellers. Please let us know soonest should you be interested.
Epson studied the letter for a long moment before he returned it to the desk drawer.
Mr. Epson?
Looking up, Epson was startled to see one of his tellers standing there. He had not noticed the teller's approach.
Yes, Mr. Franklin?
I noticed the lady customer with you. Is there some business transaction you would like me to take care of?
No, nothing at all. She just had a few questions she wanted answered. Please return to your teller's cage.
Very good, sir.